All right, welcome to today's featured interview, and we have returning Dane Wigington from geoengineeringwatch.org. And Dane is truly one of the most frequently requested guests on our show, and we have two big breaking news items that we're going to run past Dane. First of all, of course, the crazy California storms that struck in the last week or so, and Dane is right there in California, so we're going to get a from the ground report from him on what's going on, what's behind that. But then we have this other breaking news. High-powered lasers are steering lightning bolts. This has been reported by the Wall Street Journal in just the last day. It's a study published in the journal Nature Photonics, and they were able to actually steer lightning bolts with terawatt lasers by beaming lasers from the ground up into the sky. So anybody out there who thinks that it's all nonsense talking about steering storms or controlling weather, read the journal Nature Photonics or read the Wall Street Journal, because there it is admitted yet again. So Dane Wigington's our guest. Again, geoengineeringwatch.org. Dane, it's an honor to have you on, sir. Thank you for your contributions to humanity. I really look forward to this conversation.
Oh, I do as well, Mike, and the same gratitude right back to you and all the work you've done over so many years to try to pull back the curtain and expose the insanity which is metastasizing into every imaginable aspect of our life, our society, on what's left of our environment. It is truly a train that's off the tracks. So thank you for all your work with bringing it to light, Mike.
It seems obvious now. It's not just people like you or myself or others talking about the weaponization of the ecosystem, the biosphere. It's obvious now to more and more people that there is an engineered biosphere collapse or destruction that is in play right now. Would you agree that more people are finally waking up to this reality?
I do agree, but it's very perplexing that it has taken so long when our skies so often look like something from a science fiction film. Blue skies are almost gone. In any video you see of anywhere, Africa, China, any place other than India, Asia, the skies are white or dirty white. You rarely see blue sky anywhere, even commonly in backgrounds. I know you've seen this, Mike, of advertisements. You have the crisscross skies with climate engineering aerosol dispersions everywhere. And we live in societies that are trying to convince themselves that this is normal when it's anything but. And aside from the visible trails, Mike, what we're trying to convey at geoengineeringwatch.org is the other facets of climate engineering. A very key core aspect is chemical ice nucleation for weather modification. So when we have these flash cool downs, you've seen that, right, Mike? You've seen these temperatures now. You see even the climate engineering cover-up crews like Weather Channel, which are paid disinformation people at best. You see them now talking about weather whiplash a lot, don't you?
Yes, yes.
They use that term a lot. So, and they use the term rain changing over to snow and the warm side of the, quote, winter storm and the cold side of the winter storm. Since when does a winter storm have a warm side with tornadoes and thunder showers? Again, they make it up as they go. And unfortunately, we have too many in the population that are willing to accept whatever narrative is thrown out. And that needs to change.
Yeah, that is extraordinary. And that goes way beyond, you know, climate and weather. People are accepting all kinds of crazy narratives right now. There is a brainwashing or psychological operation in play. But the thing about weather is, just as you said, people can look at the sky and people our age, I don't know how old you are, but I grew up in the 70s. And I can remember as a kid looking at the sky, not only were the skies blue, but they were full of tens of thousands of birds also. I mean, there was life everywhere. And I lived in a suburb. And today you look around and it's mostly dead. It's just the life isn't there anymore. Even the insects, I don't hear the locusts like I used to hear them. I don't see the bumblebees like I used to see them. I mean, we are under attack, it seems.
And the entire web of life is collapsing. I grew up in the 70s as well. And every tree was full of birds where I was anyway. And we had every rock, every log, anything you could turn over, there was legions of insects of various kinds, and now they're almost non-existent. And what people need to understand is that when these aspects of the web of life perish, we will perish with them. And we see with other organisms like trees, Mike, without which I know you know we would not be here, and how many are blowing over when the wind blows now everywhere. And if you look at their root balls, their root systems, because we know the rain is toxic, we're not guessing. In fact, we have recent peer-reviewed study to prove there's not an uncontaminated drop of rain anywhere in the world.
That's true.
You saw that. I know you follow that. North Pole, South Pole, top of Mount Everest, doesn't matter. All contaminated. So when we see the root balls of these trees tip over, their feeder roots are largely gone. When you have summer now in California, that in where the region I live, that was 3 months long 20 years ago, now it's 9 months long, the feeder roots all die off. So once the trees lose those, the whole root ball system begins to die back, just like the canopies are dying back. When the ground then becomes saturated and the wind blows, there's nothing to hold that tree up. It falls over. So there are so many aspects affecting these core pillars of life on which all of our lives depend. And we have official agencies lying to us, telling us it's just the beetles killing the trees, which is their final fallback excuse. We're drowning literally in a sea of deception.
Now, talk to us about the recent storms that really devastated certain parts of California. Were you in the area that was hit by all that heavy rainfall?
No. And in fact, that region was not that big. That was another mass deception. Let's rewind back, Mike, to December 2021. We had similar circumstances. Lots and lots of sensationalized headlines. The rainpocalypse coming in. The big snow levels in the Sierras that we were told were going to put a massive dent in the drought. What happened during then that winter leading into the summer of 2022? Drought just deepened further. Worst drought based on paleo data in at least 1,200 years. So all that rain didn't mean much when they turned off the spigot, and they did at the transition from 2021 to 2022, which would be last winter. There was no rain in my region on the east side of Lake Shasta, which normally gets 70 inches a year. After late December, there was not a drop of rain until April. Literally the entire winter season, not a drop. We should have received about 50 inches of rain where I live. Nothing. So, and again, we have to consider this, Mike, with all the snow. And you've seen the sensationalized headlines about all the snow in the Sierras and parts of the Sierras, right?
Mm-hmm. Yes, right.
So what happens with a chemically, artificially nucleated frozen material? And that's what we're dealing with here. There's no question. We've tested the precipitation. So the artificial ice nucleating elements are in this precipitation. It tends to sublimate. I know you know what that means, but for your listeners, it to a large degree converts from a solid to a gas, bypassing the liquid phase. So there's not nearly as much runoff of this frozen material that's artificially nucleated as there would be off a naturally nucleated material. So that's, again, one more reason that snowpack doesn't mean that much, not to mention the fact that it's toxic. So we see one section of California, Mike, from the Bay Area, slightly north, and then south, Portola, and other regions along a specific corridor where they trained in most of that moisture. And we examined photographs from a CNN expose on the flood area in California. They made it sound like the entire state was underwater, which was a blatant, glaring lie. Nothing unusual in my area. In fact, on the east side of Lake Shasta, which is a big normal rain area, we didn't get that much here. But 33 of 35 pictures on a CNN photo expose of the California rainpocalypse, 33 of those pictures were from the same exact corridor in Central California.
No. So I'm so glad we're talking to you about this directly, because even I was under the impression that it was a much larger area with much more inundation. I mean, of course, that's why we have to talk to you actually being there. It's just incredible, the level of deception.
It's massive. They want people to go back to sleep thinking that the drought has been put to bed. Couldn't be further from the truth. So you see these reservoirs you might have seen on the news. They say they show specific reservoirs in that same corridor that are now at full pool. Did you see that?
So they showed overall narrative. Yeah,
they showed some that are full now in that specific corridor. Those are very small, shallow reservoirs. What about Lake Shasta? It's in my backyard. Literally, Lake Shasta is my backyard. Biggest reservoir in the state. It's half empty right now.
Wow. So what that means then is, unless there's a lot more widespread rain between now and, you know, early or late spring, then this summer is going to be absolutely brutal for California.
You're completely correct. That's exactly what it means. And what people don't stop to think about, and agencies certainly don't tell them about, you can't just make up for a loss of 500 inches of rain, which is what the loss is where I live. Since 2007, we're about 500 inches of rain short. You can't make up for the fact that the atmospheric relative humidity over that period has been getting lower and lower and lower. And in fact, that drop in atmospheric RH, which creates a VPD scenario, vapor pressure deficit, I think we've talked about in a previous exchange, which right. means the trees can't open their stomata, their respiratory ports, breathing ports. They can't absorb CO2. They can't expel oxygen. They're simply dormant. And that's even harder on trees like Doug fir, which is the primary tree here, even harder than the lack of water and the toxic rain. You combine all those factors over 15 years, they can dump as much toxic rain on us as they want. The forests are done. In regard to Doug fir, they are all dying off here. I can't express how grave the situation is with the Doug firs, and the official agencies blame it on the beetles, but that is not the case. And again, back to the rain that we have had, nothing significant in many parts of the state. And we watched them with radio frequency microwave transmissions on the SAT radar loops. We watched them manipulating the rain into that corridor, because the frequency transmissions have a repelling effect on the aerosolized storm moisture. So it repels it away from that transmitter. Mm-hmm. So the transmitters on either side of where they funneled this water were activated. Does that make sense?
Yeah, but bring our audience up to speed about this idea. For those new listeners, talk about the ground stations that are located in various areas, including, I believe there exists some mobile or ship-based transmission stations that can operate, for example, you know, off the coast of Florida or in the Gulf area, and how give us an overview of kind of how this works, and then we'll bring in that new science about steering storms, which showed up in the Wall Street Journal.
You're correct on all fronts, and that's why you're able to get so much data out, Mike. I appreciate that you keep track of many battlefronts. And the ground-based transmission facilities, the NEXRAD facilities gridded throughout the U.S., used to steer storms from the west in California to hurricanes in Florida. The transmitters, when activated, energized, have a repelling effect on the atmospheric storm moisture that's been saturated with electrically conductive particles, the climate intervention elements. So by those means of repelling, as that moisture's coming in, if they activate transmitters on either side of that moisture, they can push it toward the center, if you will. And then, as you correctly mm-hmm. mentioned, SBX radar, sea-based X-band radar, that looks like, if your listeners want to look that up, SBX radar looks like a giant golf ball on top of an oil derrick. And those are the biggest SBX platforms. You have SBX also on military vessels. So again, with these means, their ability to manipulate storm moisture is absolutely profound. And it's inarguable. If your listeners search geoengineeringwatch.org hurricanes, and they can find our coverage of Hurricane Ian, which I know we went over last time, and Nicole, Harvey, Maria, you can really see the transmitter manipulation of those storms, because we go through painstaking effort to record each loop as it happens. It's hours and hours of that. So the bottom line is, between saturating the atmosphere with the electrically conductive particles, ionizing the air mass, they can then manipulate that with the ground-based transmitters. And their ability to control the spigot, the flow of rain, where it rains, how much it rains, how toxic that rain is absolutely staggering. So they're trying to create a situation, in my opinion, right now, where people think, okay, California's had all this rain, everything's fine, drought's over, couldn't be further from the truth.
I remember the first time I heard this idea of weather control, I was very, very skeptical. I thought, that's impossible, that weather is so powerful and large scale and so far beyond the reach of humans to directly manipulate. And then I remember years ago, I saw that your website, geoengineeringwatch.org, you had collected a series of published patents all about weather control. And what's the number of patents that you've documented so far? I forgot the number.
We're adding to them every year, and we're getting close to 200 now.
Wow.
So every year, there's many more patents right now being added to this skyscraper of insanity that is this list. And when you have – once you interfere with the systems, and again, the climate system is far more malleable than most people would ever imagine. When we rewind back to the commencement of Project Cirrus, which was the U.S. military's first intervention with hurricanes, 1947, with a very, very small addition to the equation. It was, I believe, I can't remember how many kilos of dry ice. It was a very small amount. It was 40 or 50 kilos of dry ice or even less. The effect on a hurricane from that was so profound that it changed course, and there were many lawsuits that were initiated because they felt the military had actually negatively affected this hurricane, caused it to make landfall in a place where it did a lot of damage. And that's from an extremely small intervention. So what's interesting to me is, Mike, you know, the vast majority of people know of, quote, weather modification programs, right? A single engine propeller driven airplane with a few flares in the wings, right? Most people know about that. And they think somehow that has an effect. But then when you bring up the fact that militaries around the globe, with our U.S. military being the biggest player of all, can profoundly affect the weather when you have a military tanker like a KC-135 that can carry 100 tons of material and dump it in the clouds, then they think, no, that would never happen. Our military would never do that, or our government would never do that. What an incredibly naive notion.
Well, and also now when you have these ground-based stations, they don't have to carry the payload with them. They can be tied into the power grid, and they can beam actual electromagnetic energy that can cause ionization. Or in the case that we're going to talk about here, lasers, they can literally push, you know, terawatt laser beams into the sky. And doing this, they can steer storms. And again, folks, this is right out of the Wall Street Journal. And if people want to look that up, it's called Lasers Can Guide Dangerous Lightning Strikes to a Safer Path. You see, that's the Wall Street Journal title. Now, Dane, your reaction to the fact that, yeah, they're admitting this now, but they're kind of trying to hide it into, say, oh, this is about moving lightning away from airports and things like that. Isn't that interesting?
It is. Anytime you interfere with a system, you have a negative result when you interfere with natural systems, as I know you know. And in the case of lightning, it's a very profound phenomenon. It only needs a path. It will always take the easiest path. Thus, I'm sure many may have seen on Discovery Channel and other documentary shows, if you fire a small model rocket with a very fine thread of wire that's connected to it that spools off as that rocket goes up, if you do that during a thunderstorm, you're very likely going to get a strike there just from that very thin wire, because it simply creates an easier path. Lightning will find that path and come down. I actually did lightning suppression work for Bechtel Power. And that's one of the things that's so far kept me safe on my mountaintop in Northern California, because I'm off grid. It's a prime spot for lightning to strike. I've taken one direct hit here, but I have the whole hill gridded off with lightning rods and a grid on the perimeter of the mountain to take that charge to ground. Lightning's always trying to go to ground. So them conducting this is not that hard for them to steer and manipulate the strikes, because that disbalance in charge wants to get to ground. But I would argue this is just one more means of taking people's eye off of the tankers that are dumping literally millions of tons, tens of millions of tons of particulates into our skies every year. And just as they did, Mike, I'm sure you saw all the media coverage of the few balloons carrying a few pounds of material that may have gotten up to the stratosphere that was launched from Baja right?
Right. That wasn't that the Make Sunsets company doing
correct.
That?
Thank you.
Yeah, polluting the skies for money.
and they pump that story up as if that had any significance other than being a publicity stunt. And again, all of it takes everybody's eyes off of the tankers that are crisscrossing our skies, dumping tens of millions of tons annually.
Right.
So there's a lot of distraction going on, but on the climate intervention scenario and the various aspects of that, because many people think if they don't see a sky that's got very visible trails from horizon to horizon, there's nothing going on. And that couldn't be further from the truth. These engineered winter weather scenarios are a core part of climate engineering, and the conditions they create in the ground are unimaginably destructive for whatever life forms are left. When you drop temperatures, literally in the case of Denver recently, I'm sure you saw this, they dropped 75 degrees in hours
from
50 plus above to 24 below. And you're talking about a chemical that's chemically frozen material that's so cold to the touch, it flash freezes, flash burns, and it just destroys the ecosystems, Mike. And it's they're wreaking havoc with the engineered winter events.
Oh, clearly. And causing massive crop failures, which is the next thing I wanted to get to. But before we go to that, you know, the winter wheat wipeout has already happened across the Midwest, you know, the breadbasket states of America. We'll get to that. But let me read you just three sentences from this study about lasers guiding lightning, because it is exactly what you just said, Dane, where they can ionize the air, they can create electrically conductive channels to guide lightning. This means that they can guide lightning into intended targets. They can literally weaponize lightning strikes to hit where they want them to hit. So here it is. Number one, this is from the study published in that journal, what is it, Nature Photonics. Number one, a laser beam is focused through a telescope and short, intense laser pulses are sent towards clouds above the tower tip, right? So they have a tower where they want the lightning to go. Number two, the pulses ionize the air beyond the tower tip, creating an electrically conductive channel that can guide lightning to the rod below. And then number three, a rod atop a tower helps provide a, quote, safe path for lightning to follow to the ground. So they're admitting it. They can use lasers to have lightning strike wherever they want, but they can also move storms with the same technology. It's right there in the study. Amazing.
It is. Let me take this to another level, if I can, that they are not alluding to in any of these reports. Because all that imbalance in electrical charge needs is a conductive path to make it initiate that strike. From an airborne platform, it is certainly well within current technological realms, and there is data to back this up, that they can, in the right atmospheric conditions, from an airborne platform, i.e. an aircraft, with a laser to the ground, not a powerful laser, doesn't need to be a powerful laser, it only needs to be a conductive path for that imbalance of charge, they can, in theory, and based on the technical data that's already available, initiate a cloud-to-ground strike from an airborne platform, which would be quite a weapon, wouldn't you say?
Yes,
and
absolutely.
Again, it's not like they're generating the power of that lightning strike. No, that power is already there atmospherically. They're simply putting the key in the door that allows it to make that transition to ground. And again, what they have at their disposal, Mike, is absolutely shocking. It's shocking. And there are certain aspects of this they don't want to disclose, but that is technologically well within current parameters, a cloud-to-ground initiated strike with a conductive beam, a laser beam.
It's extraordinary. I like how you describe that. The energy already exists. They're just directing it to where they want it to go, using a lot less
That's
energy
all.
Than what is actually being released.
Now, same with the ionosphere heaters. Just to add to that, you know, how people don't really want to accept that you could have a transmission from a ground-based facility that could actually heat the atmosphere to extraordinarily high temperatures, so much so that it causes a bulge in the atmosphere that, in theory, an ICBM would hit resistance. That's the military stated purpose of an ionosphere heater like HAARP, to create resistance for an incoming ICBM. And that they can do that from a ground-based facility is very difficult for many people to comprehend. But as you just correctly highlighted, that this small input of energy has an extraordinary output. Same with the ionosphere. It's an electrically charged layer of the atmosphere. And when you beam 3.5 million watts of power, which is what HAARP can produce, into the ionosphere, causes an electrical chain reaction. So small input, massive output.
Yeah. Now, I want to ask you about the food wipeout scenario, but there's something else first. I just want your take on this. The UK Daily Mail did a bizarre article, or I should say an article on a bizarre thing that happened at the Davos, you know, World Economic Forum thing earlier this week. Here's the headline. Biden's climate envoy, John Kerry, says an extraterrestrial force brought select people to Davos to, quote, save the planet in bizarre World Economic Forum speech. And here you have John Kerry talking about he's part of a, quote, select group of human beings that have been brought together by an extraterrestrial force to save the planet. What do you make of that? Because we've not heard that before.
I looked at some of Kerry's statements and just John Kerry in general, if we look back at his history, his involvement in these types of weapons of mass destruction, and he is neck deep in all of it. And we published at Geoengineering Watch a fairly lengthy report that relates to everything we're talking about now, the frequency transmission weapons of mass destruction, their potential to create seismic activity. And John Kerry, for example, going to Antarctica, even in the midst of an election, a presidential election, I know you know about that, then going back to Christchurch, New Zealand, leaving with other U.S. diplomats literally hours before a massive quake hit. Same thing happened in Haiti. U.S. personnel pulled out just prior to massive quake hitting Haiti, and then a second time in Christchurch. It's quite obvious that they knew this was coming. How could they know? And again, this is where we're into a realm where people think, how could you possibly create seismic activity with the frequency transmission? And the science is very clear on this and not disputed. When you microwave a seismically sensitive region, you will, if you do it long enough, likely create seismic activity. And I'm not sure we've discussed this in a previous exchange, but I would encourage your listeners to search MIT atmospheric heating Fukushima earthquake. And they'll note that MIT recorded what they called, quote, extremely anomalous atmospheric heating for 3 days. Whoa, directly you're right. Above the Fukushima epicenter. Now, again, if that's not a massive red flag, what is? They can bounce a signal off the atmosphere back down into the strata, seismically sensitive zone. And this is not the first time we've seen this activity. But when you have institutions like MIT acknowledging this, that shouldn't be ignored.
So I just searched what you said, and you're absolutely correct. It comes up from the MIT Technology Review, which is at technologyreview.com. Atmosphere above Japan heated rapidly before M9 earthquake. Infrared emissions above the epicenter increased dramatically in the days before the devastating earthquake in Japan, say scientists and geologists are puzzled over reports of strange atmospheric phenomena in the days before big earthquakes. So there you go.
Unreal. Big red flag. And they're grabbing at straws because they're not willing or able to tell the truth. So they're somehow trying to hypothesize that the stress on that seismically sensitive zone was creating the heating in the atmosphere. That's completely backwards. And yet we see the same. It's just like saying safe and effective in other arenas, right, Mike? I mean, it couldn't be further right from the truth.
No, I mean, that's crazy. How could they think that that's seismic crazy pressure in the ground would heat the sky?
Exactly. It's completely off the rails, baseless. But hey, if we look at the medical industry, and I know this is your wheelhouse, that, I mean, how could using neurotoxins in injections not do harm? And yet we have the entire medical community pretending that that's the case. So we are dealing with science that is what the Matrix controllers say it is.
Yeah.
And we have a public that is all too willing to gulp down whatever they're fed.
Now, I've been focusing a whole lot more on food and agriculture and engineered scarcity of food inputs, and also, you know, the weather weaponization of food crop yields, you know, to disturb food crop yields and so on. So let me ask you, in that area, one of the major side effects of these freezes, floods, droughts, almost anything that veers from a spring-like, you know, condition causes food destruction. And you're in California, you know that a lot of the orchards there could be avocado orchards, could be almond orchards, could be any kind of orchards. When you destroy those trees, you don't get a new crop coming back next year. It could be 10 years before you get harvest from those crops. So these are decade-long effects when they are sufficiently devastating, or the citrus crops in Florida, for example. So talk to us about the links between weather weaponization and food destruction, and do you think that this is an intended effect or just a side effect of what they're doing?
The consistency with which agricultural regions are being targeted can only lead to the conclusion that this is an intended part of the agenda. Agricultural producing regions are absolutely being targeted, and they were already collapsing even without that targeting, but now it's exponentially worse. When we see citrus fields in California being shaded because of the UV being so intense, and the almond crops and so forth, they are spraying leaves with UV protectant to try to block the scorch that is occurring from the excessive UV because of the disintegrating wow. ozone layer, climate engineering, core causal factor with that. And I know people may have seen the recent completely false UN publication that the ozone layer is fine now. It's going to be all better in 20, 30 years. How long have we seen that? And how many science reports have they swept under the rug, like 1 6 months ago, that acknowledged that a huge percentage of the world's populations were being exposed to dangerous levels of UV, and the Matrix media immediately did damage control on that, trying to sweep that report under the rug. And then they just pump out a report stating something that's patently false, that the ozone layer is recovering when it's not. And people go back to sleep. So back to the agricultural regions, UV already destroying agricultural production. We're talking about not just extraordinary levels of UVB, but UVC, which is the last spectrum of UV radiation before X-ray. It's a DNA damaging spectrum of radiation. We're seeing leaves in the forest, Mike, like a big leaf maple, leaves that are stunted. They're about a third of their usual size. Bark scorch on the Cambrian layer of specific tree species is being fried from tip to trunk. It's baked clear down to the core wood. We're seeing plankton populations slaughtered from the UV because they feed in the upper layers of the water column. So again, relating all this to food supply, no plankton, no fish in the oceans. I know you know that. Pelagic fish populations of food fish are plummeting. And we're seeing orchards ripped out in California, Mike. They're tearing them out with excavators. And again, we have to add all these equations or all these factors into the equation. The UV scorching the organisms from the top down, toxic rain, killing soil microbiome, killing roots. We have subsidence happening now in the Central Valley because they're pumping so much groundwater out. The ground is literally subsiding. I mean, we're talking about extraordinarily high rates of subsidence, and that's literally compressing the former aquifer. It will never recover. And some of these aquifers, by the way, are left over from the ice age, literally. I mean, they don't just recharge. Some do, but many don't. So the consistency with which we see agriculture regions targeted with either flooding, drought, hail, flash freezes, all of it across the board, it has to be considered a target.
And you know, a listener might say, well, people can build greenhouses and then they can grow food indoors. And to some extent, that may absolutely be necessary. But folks, do you realize the cost of that food? Most of the world would starve to death because they wouldn't be able to afford to buy it. Not only do you have to build the greenhouse, then you have to control the atmosphere. You have to heat it or cool it. you have to probably provide supplemental CO2 inside the greenhouse because the plants will, you know, use up all the CO2 that's in there without some strong circulation. You can't just buy your way out of this. That's the thing. No matter how much money you throw at this, if you destroy the biosphere, you can't feed 8 billion people, period. Right, Dane?
Oh, you're completely correct. Absolutely correct. The notion that we can sustain the current paradigm with that type of micro production, it's not going to happen. And this is where the so-called solutions that some people are putting forth, it's would be literally like trying to stop a tidal wave with a Dixie cup. It's not going to work.
Right.
And so to some degree, many in the ranks of the human race at this point remind me of, Mike, you may have seen after the Sri Lanka tidal wave and earthquake, remember seeing that man out on the beach with the ocean subsiding? He's just standing there staring at the tidal wave coming at him.
Yeah, wondering like where'd the water go?
Exactly. You know, and I see so many that appear to be in that state as if they shouldn't be able to recognize the tidal wave looming above their head. And in regard to the flash freezing, which is doing a lot of damage, an article that your listeners, I would encourage them to look at because they can see the whole patent with the important sections highlighted. The title of the article is called Creating Snowstorms, the Knollenberg Patent. Knollenberg with a K, Knollenberg. Geoengineeringwatch.org, Creating Snowstorms. That's under the Create Engineering Winter section. And that patent is very revealing at the elements that can be used to artificially nucleate cloud moisture, which causes ice to start forming at far above normal temperatures. And that endothermic reaction starts to cool down that air mass, which sinks to the surface eventually because cold air is more dense. And this is what's going on a scale that's incomprehensible. Here's some of the elements named in this patent. I'm looking at it right now. If your listeners, they want to look up the patent directly, it's US 361-3992A. And
got it.
Some of the elements, potassium nitrate, ammonium nitrate, urea, artificial urea. And these are nucleating elements that barium as well. Again, highly toxic, but the climate engineers don't care. Did they care when they detonated 2,400 nuclear bombs all over the world, contaminating every living thing? Project Starfish in the magnetosphere, hydrogen bombs detonated in the magnetosphere, the reverberations of which are still doing damage. So when we look at patents like this, we see these ingredients showing up in the snow, and the damage on the ground is so profound, and it should be clear at this point. We don't get winter storms out of the Gulf of Mexico. That's not historically normal or an occurrence that we would have ever seen. And that's what we see almost every time now. We just had Winter Storm Iggy, the named winter storm by the climate engineering cover-up crew at the Weather Channel, straight out of the Gulf of Mexico. And as it moves north, we have tornadoes and thunder showers. And as it circulates counterclockwise around that low pressure zone, and they're circulating that over the Great Lakes because the Great Lakes are still largely ice-free. They're at record warm temperatures. They're picking up that moisture. They're chemically nucleating it all, and they get some snow on the backside of that. So now we have a winter storm again with a warm side and a cold side. Historically unprecedented in the last decade, now it's the norm. So we hope people connect the dots that there are many, many layers to climate engineering, and creating artificial winter weather events, key part of that. And they can search, I think I've mentioned this in our exchange before, but just in case, Chinese scientists create, engineer winter snowstorm, I think, or create snowstorm. It should come up in anything along those lines. Popular Science covered it, MSNBC, The Guardian, everybody covered it. But yet when we bring that up here, we're treated as if we're somewhere out on the fringe, which is ridiculous. This is hard science.
Yeah, and actually there are so many signs now of what is going on. For example, and also tying this back to food, we've seen over the last 12 months a very aggressive push by the globalists for indoor insect-based food production. So it's crickets and it's mealworms. And if you look at the mealworm factories, like there's a massive mealworm factory being set up in France. There's a giant cricket factory that's funded by the Canadian government being set up there. And all the stories talk about the same thing. Oh, we're going to grow your food indoors. It's going to have protein and it's going to have fat. And of course, it's going to have chitin and all this other stuff you can't digest. But they're going to grow it all indoors. And you think, why? Why are they going to do all the food indoors? And the answer is clear. They're building kind of food arcs for themselves, the select few elitists, as they destroy the skies and destroy the biosphere and destroy the ability to produce crops under the natural sun and sky. Right? I mean, that's what it seems like to me. What's your interpretation?
Well, I agree. I agree that that's the trajectory they are on. We're on the same page there. I would just argue that if we remain on this trajectory, no one gets out alive, including them. They may last a bit longer than the rest of us, but not much longer. But I agree that that's their agenda, their motives. We know they're building underground facilities. But there's a delusion there that, based on psychoanalysis straight from the manual, with the types of deficiencies that those in power inevitably have, the common thread, a near total lack of comprehension as to the consequences of their actions, even to themselves. So we are painted into a very dark corner at this point. And we at Geoengineering Watch are trying to point out this biggest hole in the bottom of the boat. Planet, stop supporting life. It's game over. And that's happening from many directions. We see the power structure maneuvering to cull the herd right now, Mike. And I know you're neck deep in that equation. You know what they're doing. And they are, I would argue, the biosphere beat them to the intersection. They thought they could play God with the weather indefinitely and stay off the consequences of doing so. And that's not the case. And now they're frantically at warp speed in that arena of their attempt to cull the herd, trying to catch up.
Yeah.
And it's not going well. It's a very nonlinear equation. Once you have co-extinction kicking in, and for your listeners that aren't familiar with that term, when certain species perish on which other species depend, those species then perish as well. It's a domino effect, and it's been activated on many fronts.
That's, I wanted to ask you that exact question. Everything you're describing here sounds like an ELE, an extinction level event. It doesn't mean that every species goes extinct. That's not going to happen. But just like you said, we coexist with other species. And for example, pollinators, just the biomass of insect pollinators, if that continues to plunge, and it's already down 70 or 80% in some areas that I've seen, which is already red alert time. But if that plunges even more, you know, humanity doesn't really have a functioning food supply, nor does the natural ecosystem upon which everything else is built. I mean, you lose the pollinators, you lose the planet, basically.
Oh, you're completely correct. And your statistics are correct as well. That's the realm we're in right now. And if your listeners search bees aluminum, they'll see the part of the equation that no official source has told them, that bees are dying of symptoms that resemble Alzheimer's and dementia in a human being, because they're packed full of aluminum, in some cases 200 times more aluminum than it takes to cause those ailments in a human being. And this is taking place 1,000 miles away from any agriculture or urban area. So where is this coming from? It's coming from the sky. We know climate engineering elements, one of the primary patents, the Welsbach patent, it's stratospheric aerosol seeding for reduction of global warming. Specifically, aluminum oxide is named in that patent. And it is, again, ubiquitous all over the world now when they're dumping tens of millions of tons of it. And so, yes, there's many things affecting the bees, glyphosate, frequency transmissions, other farm chemicals. But, and it's not just the bees, it's all terrestrial insects. But when we have a study that directly links bees and aluminum, Mike, wouldn't you think that somebody would be screaming about that? And yet we see a very concerted effort to suppress that kind of data.
No, and that's what's extraordinary. Governments around the world, like New Zealand, is focused on banning nutritional supplements, not banning the toxicity that's killing the planet, right?
That's mind-numbing. You know, it is.
As you know, Dane, the corporations hold so much sway over the regulators. That's why they can still spray glyphosate or organophosphate chemicals that do cause Alzheimer's. And frankly, if we have a bunch of honeybees out there that are lost and wandering around and not sure where they are, I'm going to call them Biden bees, by the way. And they're just like buzzing around, like, what am I doing here? Sorry to throw that bad joke in there, but this is a serious issue. I mean, this threatens the planet. Now, just in the interest of being respectful of your time, Dane, I do want to ask you about solutions. But first, how can people support your efforts? I know you have an email sign up at geoengineeringwatch.org. What else can people do to help support your efforts and your work?
What they can do from their own home computer is to, that's the reason for our site, to find reports from the site, whether it's the engineering drought section, engineering winter section, engineering wildfire section, but for whatever appropriate environmental article or environmental group, agricultural group, send the appropriate link to them or send our groundbreaking documentary, The Dimming, which is a very complete A to Z on the climate engineering issue and the cover up of the same. And that's a form of a flaming arrow. We metaphorically call it a flaming arrow. If you start enough spot fires of awareness and those spot fires begin to expand as people connect the dots and they merge into a bigger blaze that the power structure can't put out, then we can put this issue on the radar. And I would argue if we can expose it, it will cause a shockwave all over the world if people understood that they are literally under assault from the skies right now. So by sharing those links, that's a huge help for the cause. We do have the printed materials that we pass on for less than our cost at Geoengineering Watch. That's our 20-page booklets, which I think I've sent you before, Mike. And those are very effective because it's a photograph and satellite images and copies of the federal gag order. I mean, I know you know that that's on our National Weather Service and NOAA, Mike, the illegal federal gag order. Why would you gag the weathermen if you didn't have something extraordinary to hide? Yeah. Because we had so many people requesting it, we have now shirts and hoodies that have a really clear four-color image of a military a C-17 Globemaster descending on the planet, spewing out his dispersion, and with the caption, "Stop climate engineering, investigate geoengineeringwatch.org," so people could find more data. And that's a good conversation starter. We have a lot of those being put to use now too. So by these various methods to start the conversation and feed that fire of awareness. And if we can reach a critical mass of awareness, Mike, and that's where I'm so grateful to you for all you've done to help bring this issue to light. If we can reach a critical mass of awareness, I would argue the fur will fly, that people will be taking to the streets with their proverbial pitchforks and torches. No weather event, nothing at this point can be considered, quote, natural, nothing. And Mike, if we look at, sorry to ramble here for a minute, but this is important. If your listeners search, for example, a document at geoengineeringwatch.org titled Massive Senate Document, 800 pages long, outlining the scope and scale of the climate intervention operations going back decades. Within that document, there is, sorry, I had an earphone drop out here, but within that document, there is a specific provision for blanket legal immunity for anyone and everyone involved. Because the liability wow. that these programs have created is so immense. If the public ever wakes up to this, there will be a paradigm shift.
They're going to have to get in line behind the vaccine industry, I guess, if there's going to be class action lawsuits. But do you have a browser open in front of you?
I do.
Okay. Bring up censored.news. And I just want to show you, I just put your January 14th global alert at the top of censored.news in our handpicked news section. Do you see that?
Kind of slow browser here, but coming up now. Yes, thank you. Okay. Came up. Thank you, Mike.
Okay, great. So I just sent some messages to my team. We're also going to index geoengineeringwatch.org on this site so that it automatically spiders your latest alerts, because your alerts, that's what people send to me. Like every time you put out a new alert, I get about 10 copies of it sent to me by people. Like, have you seen this? So I don't know why we didn't index your site earlier, but we got to do it now. So I just sent out that instruction to my team, and I just handpicked this one.
Thank you for that.
I'll monitor.
Thank you for that, Mike.
We got to get the word out.
If I can just give a little history on what that broadcast is about, and I just completed my 388th in a row, and we pay for that airtime out of pocket. We're on 21 stations, AM and FM, on air throughout the country that we pay for out of pocket with no advertising at all, to the tune of it's well into five figures monthly. And our only goal is to expose the insanity, as I know is your only goal as well, Mike. And so we again, that's a commercial free, non-political broadcast. And it's been an ongoing effort for 7+ years now. I've never missed a week, but that's as much as I can pack into 55 minutes. And one quote that puts this into context, Mike, I know you know this quote from Lyndon Johnson from 62, where he's on film and on the records. It's the start of every single global alert broadcast. He who controls the weather controls the world. You know that quote. Let me give you another one from 4 years earlier, when Johnson was just a senator, but clearly the direction he was heading. We've just recovered this off of a archival transcript. Direct quote, Lyndon Johnson. Here it is. 1958, from space, the masters of infinity would have the power to control Earth's weather, to cause drought and flood, to change the tides and raise the levels of the sea, to divert the Gulf Stream and change temperate climates to frigid, end quote. How about that?
Wow. And that was decades
direct
ago.
Quote, 1958.
Yeah, and you think they have more advancements since then? You bet they do. That's just extraordinary. Okay, last question, and again, thank you for spending this time with us. And I know people are going to share this interview, and folks, you can repost it on your own channels as well, or you can post snippets of this interview. Just give credit to geoengineeringwatch.org. And if you're just listening to this and you're wondering why there's no video, we did not record video. This is just an audio-only conversation that we do late in the evening, or at least my time it's late. Not quite as late your time, Dane, but what is the most effective thing that people could do to try to stop this madness? I mean, is it worth the effort to contact your representatives, you know, or is it just, should they just spread awareness at this point and try to help get a critical mass of consciousness about this? What works?
It's all important. Thank you for asking that question. That's very key. People need to know what they can do. We have an activist suggestions link on the homepage of geoengineeringwatch.org to add much more input. But in regard to contacting so-called elected officials, yes, it's important. But when you send an email to their contact, it's important to CC as many of that elected official's constituents as you can, so that they know many are seeing this exchange of data. When you send something like the dimming, a link to the dimming to an elected official, and they know that 100 of their constituents knows that they got that, and they may have to answer for why they didn't act on it at some point, now you start to hold them accountable. And when you reach again farm groups, ag groups, and you land this material in their lap, it takes a while for that seed to grow sometimes. This is a shattering of a person's entire perception of the paradigm they live in. Complete shattering. And it takes time for that. Yeah. But for example, when we have elected officials like Gavin Newsom, who serves the matrix completely and entirely, and is certainly pushing towards a presidency at some point, and he has absolutely been put on notice, as I know I've stated on, I think, with an exchange with you before, I met with Gavin in his office, top aides presented data they couldn't refuse. It's all in the record. And if we can bring this to light, Mr. Newsom will have some explaining to do to the whole world. So again, we can start to put these people on notice. We need to. We must. And we can, at the same time, raise legions of the aware amongst our own ranks as they begin to have to face this issue, and that's key. And Mike, I know you know this. You've been at this so long. You know there are so many that won't face reality until they have to. But that moment, I would argue, is very close. And if we give them enough pieces of the puzzle so they understand what's happening and why, at that moment when they can no longer remain in denial, because hiding in your cabin on the Titanic doesn't save you, does it? So,
no, that's, I mean, you can't go anywhere else because the whole planet is
exactly
affected.
Exactly. So
unless you think you can have a colony on Mars or something, forget it.
Yeah. I know that's a whole nother subject. How much have we been lied to in regard to, does anybody think it's a little bit preposterous that we're told driving a dune buggy around on the moon in the 60s and nobody's been back? That's interesting to me. So again, whole nother subject, and how far does the deception go on many fronts? But in regard to the climate and any discussion, and this is key, this is no matter what side of the political fence anybody's on, no matter what their perspective is on the climate or the state of the climate, this is key. How can there be any legitimate discussion of the climate from any perspective without first and foremost addressing the single greatest climate disrupting factor of all, climate intervention operations?
Yep.
Hard exactly. to argue that.
This is a cosmic level importance discussion. And it's, you notice how the powers that be, they want to distract us with, politics, left versus right. Oh, this person versus that person, or sports, or, oh, this football player passed out on the field. Let's everybody talk about that for 72 hours. What about the skies, the rain, the soil, the things that grow our food, that keep us alive? Without that, we have nothing. We are dead without that. And yet, it's all around us. You can just look up. You can open your eyes and look up instead of looking at your screen and being propagandized and brainwashed. And yet, most people won't look at the world around them.
I would encourage your listeners to try this very simple test. If they live in it, if they can go to someplace where it's dark, no light pollution, on a still night when aerosol operations have been happening, you have the hazy skies, and you can tell when the lower air column is saturated because the visibility is not that great. If you're looking across valleys or to distant mountains, there's just a haze in the air. But if they go out on a dark night, brightest light they can find, somewhere where there's no light pollution, aim it straight up and look straight up through that beam. And you have to see it to believe it. The amount of material comes down. It looks like you're in a blizzard. It's that bad. And yes, there can be pollution particles and dust particles, but not that quantity without the aerosol spraying operations. Again, we've extrapolated from rain tests, working with one of the world's top ag institutions, that there appears to be somewhere in the range of 50 to 70 million tons of nanoparticles being dispersed into skies all over the globe. That's an extraordinary amount of material. So much so, Mike, so much of that material has fallen on our forests in Northern California that it has changed soil pH values 10 to 12 times toward alkaline. I know this is your wheelhouse. I know you know what a profound change that is, 10 to 12 times toward alkaline. We've gone from 5.4 to 6.6. The organisms can't take that. On top of the toxin itself, on top of the UV, on top of the lack of rain in general. But if they shine that light up and consider they are breathing what they are seeing coming down through that light with every breath they take. In fact, current science data indicates we may be inhaling as many as 20 million nanoparticles with every single breath we take. Think about that.
Lord. Yeah, and microplastics in the air in the cities and probably part of the mix. Well. But we're going to end up, those of us living today, when we expire, if we're buried and our bodies decompose, there will be left an imprint of our lungs in plastic.
It reminds me, yeah.
You know, like... it'll be like a plastic lung tree there, still left behind.
Extreme example. You've seen, I'm sure, the pictures of the albatrosses and so forth that have died because they're decomposing and they're literally full of plastic that they have consumed. You've seen those pictures. The amount that we're absorbing is truly extraordinary, building up in all of us. It's a wonder any of us can walk and talk at this point, but our bodies can only take so much. And again, that flashlight test, is very, very shocking for those that are willing to take the time to do it.
Yeah, I would just add to that, folks, if you have night vision goggles, put on a pair of night vision, look up at the night sky where there's no light pollution on a clear night. There's all kinds of stuff flying around up there, by the way, and way higher than airplanes, because I know what an airplane at 30,000 feet looks like from the ground, or 5,000 feet or what have you. You know, I'm a former aviator. You know, I'm trained as a pilot, and this stuff that I see with night vision, cruising around, way higher than airplanes. So just saying, there's stuff happening that you're not being told about.
Well, there's a lot happening, and what I would again encourage people to prioritize. If the boat's sinking, we need to deal with the biggest hole in the bottom of the boat first, as we state at geoengineeringwatch.org. Short of nuclear cataclysm, the overall ramifications from the climate engineering operations, aka weather and biological warfare, are the most dire and immediate threat we collectively face, again, short of nuclear cataclysm. And even on that front, I know, as we've discussed before, because climate engineering is decimating the planet's protective layers, making us much more vulnerable to a large CME, coronal mass ejection, a solar flare, mm-hmm. which would shut down grids around the globe and prevent nuclear plants from cooling themselves. Now we have Fukushima times 100, 200, 300, game over. So yeah. Even in the nuclear realm, climate engineering is pounding the nails into our collective coffin. It's the most insane single human endeavor ever deployed by the human race, Climate Intervention Manhattan Project. We need to deal with it.
Well said. Well said. Okay. Dane Wigington, everybody, from geoengineeringwatch.org. Just type that into your browser's URL box there. Just go straight to the website, geoengineeringwatch.org. And as always, feel free to repost this interview on other channels and platforms. And just give credit to Dane Wigington at his website. And Dane, stand by. Don't disconnect yet. I just want to thank you for joining me, Dane. It's been a pleasure.
Gratitude's mine, Mike. I am extraordinarily grateful for your voice in this battle and on other battle fronts. I know you've been marching forward in the fight for the greater good for so long, and it's a pleasure and honor to march with you and all your listeners and followers.
Team Humanity, folks. That's what we're all part of. Be part of it if you're not already. Team Humanity, we are going to help humans survive and navigate this apocalypse. So again, I'm Mike Adams, the founder of Brighteon.com, the free speech video platform. Notice nothing has been censored here. In fact, we have no edits, no censorship, none of that whatsoever in this entire conversation. Nothing was off limits. We covered it all. So thank you again, Dane, and thank you all for listening. God bless you all. Take care, and we'll have more updates from Dane later this year on Brighteon.com and other platforms. Take care, everybody.
A global reset is coming, and that's why I've recorded a new 9-hour audiobook. It's called The Global Reset Survival Guide. You can download it for free by subscribing to the naturalnews.com email newsletter, which is also free. I'll describe how the monetary system fails. I also cover emergency medicine and first aid and what to buy to help you avoid infections. So download this guide. It's free. It's my gift to you, simply because I want like-minded people to survive.